I don't know whether this is just for recording or is there a speaker or whether I must shout. Okay, welcome, welcome honorable members, welcome officials from the department, acting DDG and your team, and everybody else, you are welcome. Are we ready to start? We normally start at 10, so today we thought we must start at 9:30 because there is a sitting this afternoon. But also it does look like we have got a number of items that we need to deal with. So your advance apologies are accepted for those who came late. We have received two apologies. There's an apology from Minister Molewa, who's attending a special cabinet meeting this morning, and therefore she won't be able to attend this meeting. The DG also, she's not available. She's outside of the country. She's in Washington, attending the Global Environment Facility meeting. And she won't be able to be with us today. But the rest of the officials are here. And I see the honorable members are also here. Of course, those who consistently attend, except the honorable Mabilu, I don't see him. He's on his way. Yeah, so the first item that we were supposed to deal with, honorable members, is a briefing by the Northwest Department of Rural Environment and Agriculture on the donation of high-value animals to private individuals. I must say that as of today, we have not received any correspondence from the department. We have not received any presentation. We have not received any apology. We tried last week. The secretary of the committee tried to follow up with the department to ascertain whether they will be coming to the meeting. And at the time that she was speaking with them, there were no indications whether they will come or they will not come. So now we are sitting with the problem. We wrote the MEC a letter, I think 2 weeks back, to indicate that she's been invited to come and present a report to the committee on the donation of high-value species, and we gave her the background, and we have not received any correspondence. Initially, after the committee resolved to interact on this matter, we initially wrote a letter to the chairperson of the portfolio committee in the legislature, Honorable Maluleke. She also did not give us that report that we requested. Just to give honorable members some bit of information of what we are talking about. Some time back, the Northwest Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Development took a decision to donate about 150 buffaloes, 50 rhinos, and about 50 sable antelopes, worth in excess of 100 million, to a company of three private individuals. We got to interact with this matter when we, if you remember, honorable members, when we considered a briefing by SANParks on the wildlife economy. That's where this matter arose. So we thought we must ask our colleagues in the portfolio committee to give us a report so that we can check whether we can follow it up or not. They didn't. We gave them more than a month. Then we asked the MEC to then give us a report and come and make a presentation to the committee. The MEC has not picked up or anyone from the department. It's a matter that is should be concerning for everybody, because it talks to public accountability. And we're here to make sure that everybody accounts, not only in the department, but everybody in the Republic who deals with matters that this committee is entrusted with. Anybody who administers the legislation that has been processed by this committee, if there is a need for anybody to come and account, that person must come here and account to this committee. Now, it's quite sad that not all of us think like that, that our actions are subjected to scrutiny. But there is not much that we can do today. We have requested a gentleman from legal services to come and then advise on the way forward. When we wrote that letter, those letters to the MEC, we did touch base with legal services just to satisfy ourselves that we are not doing anything outside of our mandate. And we were assured that what we were doing was completely within the mandate of this committee, completely within the mandate of Parliament to do that. So I'm just going to give him an opportunity to tell the committee what then is our options. If this is the situation, if there are people in the Republic of South Africa who do not want to account on their actions, and those people are using public money which has been appropriated by this parliament, what is it that we must do then as a committee of parliament? So I'm going to ask him just to give us a briefly, options that we have, because the letter was then drafted with the input from legal services, and so he's also going to speak to that. There is an option to summon, which I think from where I'm seated, he must talk to that. As to what will be the processes to summon, because I don't think it should be allowed in a democratic country like ours for somebody to give Parliament the middle finger, irrespective of the whose that person is. So Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah, you'll properly introduce yourself.
Okay.
You know, I don't have all my documents in front of me, so I'm sorry I was not able to properly introduce you. Do that.
Not a problem at all. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Frank Jenkins. I'm a legal advisor here in Parliament since 2001. This matter does raise some interesting issues, specifically if we want to call the MEC or the department or self the provincial legislature. I mean, the purpose is certainly, I would say, for this committee to gather that information, to have a national picture of what's happening in the environmental sector there. And that is within the mandate of this committee. So one must not overemphasize the issue that we want to call the MEC to account, because it's very easy for them to slip out of it, to say, well, we account to the provincial legislature. But the constitution is clear. You can call any organ of state for your oversight purposes. So your oversight purposes, in fact, goes a little bit wider than your account, power to call people to account. The issue of donating animals, Honourable Chairperson, is part of your supply chain management policy, as I said to you when we had the meeting. Your supply chain management, if one looks at Treasury documentation, starts with your demand planning, and it goes through your acquisition processes, your financial management process, asset management processes, debtor management processes, and then it goes into your disposal management. So it's certainly part of that. In terms of summoning a person or an organ of state or the head of an organ of state, the process is as follows. The committee takes a resolution, or let me start with this, it's usually a matter of last resort. And we do it in terms of, well, the Constitution just sets it out broadly, in section 55, if I'm not mistaken, 56, my apologies, 56, you can compel, in terms of national legislation or the rules, any person to comply or summons a person to submit a report or give evidence on oath. So the Powers and Privileges Act then sets out the procedure, how it must be done. And it starts with a resolution of the committee to say, well, these persons did not want to appear before us after we've asked them. Once the committee has tabled the resolution, we draft a letter for the speaker's approval to say to the speaker, because it's the NA committee, and the NCOP would be the chairperson. The speaker then authorizes the summons. There's a template that we have for a summons, which will set out the time, place, and the reason and documents that must accompany the persons. And that's issued eventually by the Secretary of Parliament after the Speaker has given her permission. And we give that to the Sheriff or to another person to deliver at the person who is summoned. And it is the summons itself indicates that it's a crime, an offence, to ignore the summons. So obviously there can be good reasons why someone can't appear on a certain date, but it must be proper reasons, because the summons is, is a criminal sanction attached to that. So especially when we are operating between organs of state, it becomes quite a sensitive issue. If one organ of state simply ignores another organ of state, that's in essence also against Chapter 3 that deals with cooperative government. In essence, against those provisions there in Section 41-42. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. comments quickly, and then we dispose of this matter. No comments. Honourable Edward.
Thank you, Chair. I think in my head it's a clear path. I think it's an unnecessary waste of time, and we didn't ask them yesterday to come. We gave them we as a committee decided to call them quite a long time ago. I think it's a fair amount of time, and I also think that if they couldn't make it, then the least they could have done is to say, listen, it's not possible. But as far as I gathered, they ignored the whole request completely.
Okay. Honorable Makubela, Honorable Mabilo.
Chief, may I request that you start with Honorable Mabilo? Unless I'm a spoilie, then.
Okay. Honorable Mabilo. He doesn't want to spoil your input. You can't talk and chew at the same time. No, it's fine. It's still chewing. We can come. We know Honorable Mabilo has to, his condition is such that he has to do what he's doing now.
No, I was not aware, Chair, that he's chewing. I was not exposing him. I did not mean to expose him. It is in fact that I believe truly that probably what I'm going to say may spoil what he wanted to say. Mindful of the fact that, as has been indicated already by the legal advisor, that it's quite a sensitive matter. It's not something necessarily to be taken lightly. And I'm aware and taking note of what Honorable Edwards indicated, that we might have given them a fair amount of time to respond. And that concluding or resolving that as a last resort that they did not appear, therefore we should summon them, should be taken really as a last resort. Seated here, I'm wondering whether we can be able to conclude that we have exhausted everything to the extent that immediately we think we should in this particular meeting say that let's conclude or take that last resort. So I wanted to appeal to committee members that probably beyond this meeting we see what could happen. Perhaps in the next meeting of the portfolio committee we could have the matter saving once more and see what else we could have done. And if indeed we are convinced that there's just nothing in our power that can still be done other than summoning them, we could then take that decision and do so and go ahead with writing such letter in the spirit, of course, of the very cooperative governance that we're talking about. So I just don't want us to rush into taking that decision. Not to say that we haven't had enough time to interact with them yet. I am quite aware of what we've done so far. But I'm saying, let's go beyond this and just see whether indeed there's either, I wouldn't say defiance, just people that are not cooperative and we've got no other option other than to take that decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mabilo?
No, Chair, I think the work has covered me, but safe to say, it will be important that from this committee we express our displeasure around how they've reacted to our request, first and foremost. Secondly, that their conduct is unacceptable and unjustifiable. And certainly we view this in a serious light. And then take forward what the OPC. That's my comments.
Thank you. Khaled, you want to be the last, I see you want to be the weak.
No, Chairperson, I wanted to keep quiet on this one, but I was provoked by Mr. Makobela. When he said you must try other means, we've done everything that we could. We've put this on the program because that's why our program that guides us as a portfolio, what needs to be done. And if you look what has happened here, it's a serious offense if you take, I mean, if you donate the state assets to private individuals. We wanted to find out exactly what transpired that move by the Northwest Provincial Department. So if they ignore all the pleas to appear before the committee so that they account or give us an explanation what to inform their decision, and we are sitting with a very serious offense at a deviation on the supply chain, as the legal opinion we have got from the legal team. So, Chairperson, I think we need to summon them to appear before the committee. That's the only thing that we can do in order for them to come and account before this portfolio committee. We cannot, you've done what we can as a portfolio. We've put this in the program, and we have actually put other things that were critically important to deal with and in order to accommodate them. So now we are here. They haven't indicated that they won't appear. We are sitting here. We are coming to discuss this issue. We have prepared ourselves only to find that there are nowhere to account. So we really need to pursue the avenue that has been given to us by the legal advisor. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, members. I think probably in summary, maybe let me just strike a balance. Because I don't hear Honorable Makubela to be opposed to summoning them. So in fact, the question of summoning them is not contested by anybody. So all of us agree that as a last resort, we need to summon them to come and account. I think Honorable Makubela was speaking to just the timing that it should be done next week when we meet as a committee. Maybe just to say before I give a summary, you know, when you are invited to come and attend anything, when you are invited by a parliament or a committee of parliament acting, of course, with the powers that parliament has, if you are not able to come, you send a letter of apology specifying the reasons why you are not able to come. You don't just simply ignore the request, especially if the request has been done well in advance. I find it to be very odd that somebody can, even if you think that Parliament is doing something that it's not supposed to be doing, even if you think that Parliament is usurping the powers of other bodies where you are accountable to, but at least say that you are not able to come because you think that Parliament is doing what it's not supposed to be doing, and then you request an engagement and we engage. Satisfy ourselves that what we are doing is illegal or is out of ordinary or whatever the case may be. You don't simply just decide to stay at home. I find it very odd. I mean, for public officials, people are supposed to be accountable publicly to do that. I really think it's out of order. It's really out of order because here we're simply asking the questions, how did you dispose of these assets, these spaces, especially given the value? We're saying it's in excess of 100 million. It may be way beyond that. 150 buffaloes, you know, one buffalo was auctioned somewhere. And the value that it derived from that auction. So we're not talking about small change here. We're talking about serious resources that belongs to the people of this country. So for a person to say, I'm not going to respond, I'm not going to come, do as you want, as you please, it's very bad for public accountability. These are not personal resources. These are public monies. It's there in the Northwest Province, but it was appropriated by this parliament. You know, over 43% of the money that comes from national fiscals go to the provinces. And it is us here in parliament who are voting for those monies to go to provinces. So it might be their money, but it is us, parliament, who said they must have that. If it was not because of an act of parliament, they would not be having any any resources. So when we come, we call them to come and account, they must come. So that is really the issue, and I don't think anybody has got an issue with that. So it's just a question of timing. So I think the committee agrees and resolves that we should summon them to come and appear before Parliament. But then those summonses must then be, the processes must then be activated as of next week, if anything has not transpired between now and next week. Just to accommodate Honorable Makuvele, that probably they might not, there might have been a serious inconvenience on their part between wherever they were and to come here. They missed the flights, they couldn't make phone calls, they couldn't send letters, they couldn't send emails. So just to cover that aspect, probably we say we'll start with the summoning of them to appear here by next week. Between now and then, probably something might... We must say that they have confirmed receiving the letter. The secretary of the committee spoke to them. They did confirm receipt of our letter. So there's no issue about that. So that's that, honorable members. That's how we conclude this. But coming here, they will come to Cape Town. They will come and account here. Because... there is reason for us to want to find out what happened. Maybe whatever they did was completely within their scope, within the policy. They were right in doing whatever that they've done. It's not for us to say they were not right. But let them come and explain. I don't think there's too much to ask for that. So we're done, honorable members. Mr. Jenkins will then help us in drafting both the resolution and the summonses, and then from next week we'll then start with the processes of dispatching that. Thank you very much for coming, Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Chair. I really like the environmental issues, but I'm required to go to the finance this morning.
We are. We will release you. Thank you very much for coming. Okay. Next item. The next item is a briefing by the department on the implementation of the industry waste plan. And that briefing must also include REDISA. We thought that we should combine the two honorable members because they are all dealing with the waste. So we thought we should get a briefing, detailed briefing on the industry waste plans, and then and also a briefing on REDISA, which you know that the matters have been outstanding for some time. I hope that the department is ready. They have not lost something, or the presentation is in front of us. So I'm going to request the acting DG then to tell us what we must do about all of these things and who's going to do what. DG?
Thank you, Chair. Morning, Chair and honourable members. We will, Mark Gordon, who is the relevant DDG for the branch chemicals and waste, will take us through the presentation, which will briefly just give us a background on industry waste management plans, and also including the tire stream, because Redisa then would be a higher stream in the overall waste management plans, and he will just take us through where we started with those, why we started with the tire plan first, and the expansion into the other waste streams, which is basically where the draft notice came in, so that we can have a clearer picture of where everything fits in and why the review was necessary at this point, Chair. And from there, then, Chair, I think we'll talk to the other issues around second quarter performance, which will respond to the questions and hand over to the CFO to also talk to the financials. So thank you, Mark.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honourable members and colleagues. Just moving on then in terms of the outline. Chair, as requested by this committee some time ago, the committee requested an update in terms of where we were as a country in the implementation to what is known as industry waste management plans. And I'll go into detail regarding the background, the enabling legislation, and progress with the implementation of these plans. The summary of comments received from industry in terms of the process that was undertaken to publish these plans for comments, the consultation with various sectors of society, and particularly the affected industries concerned, the issues relating to amendments, and the concern from the committee at the time was why were these notices being extended, or the process for consultation extended, and I'll go through detail in terms of the reasons why, and that constituted further consultation for most of the year. The final Section 28 notice that's now been published, representations made by industry sectors, going through some discussion, recommendations, and I'll deal with the one of the industry plans. Shall we go? Okay. So, there we go. The purpose is to brief you on these plans. So the background, Chair, is that the Section 28 notice is a provision in terms of the Waste Management Act that enables the development of what is known as industry waste management plans. The Minister has, in a previous budget speech, prioritized three sectors: paper and packaging, lighting, and the last sector, the electronic and electrical waste. The commenting period for this notice was for 30 days, and I just want to say, Chair, that in terms of the background, the notice calls for all types of industry plans. Three of these plans or priority plans, I've listed them, but the one that's currently running, which is the waste tire plan, I'll come back to that in detail, and it's also provided for by the specific provision in the Waste Act. So, in terms of where we were with the notice, and essentially what the notice does is that the Minister publishes an intention notice calling for plans. Industry has got time to submit comments, and there were issues surrounding the a request for an extension of comments, and that was granted with the final date of submission, the 30th. September 2015. So the first notice was published in July 2015. Industry requested extra time, and we've granted those extensions on the basis that they needed to consult further with the sectors. So what is an industry waste management plan? It's basically a plan that covers a particular waste stream. It's holistic, it's industry-wide, it's economy-wide, it affects an entire value chain of a waste stream from a point of generation to collection to transportation to storage and eventually to value-adding, beneficiating, and processing. So it covers an entire value chain. It's an effective instrument, and I'll discuss it just now, in terms of how a waste stream can be effectively managed. Part of the plan includes awareness, capacity building, research that underpins some of the targets that need to be attained, and essentially the plan promotes the waste hierarchy, which is to reduce, reuse, recycle. So recycling is a major part of the waste management plan. In terms of the plan, there are a number of factors that it needs to include. Number one, the severity of potential impacts on the specific activity of the waste stream, available resources for regulation of the waste stream, the level of maturity of a specific sector. So, Chair, we have about 40 waste streams that's been identified in the country, and we have to prioritize them in terms of its impact and the maturity of that particular industry sector to be organized and to be organized in a way that you indeed can implement an industry-wide plan. The level of organization within the sectors, the level of cooperation from the sector, good track record of compliance by the sector, existing management measures, and, of course, recycling rates with targets. Industry plans are tools that facilitate this entire value chain, cradle to cradle. It's part of what we call a circular economy in terms of how we manage waste streams from the time waste is generated to the time it is disposed of and how we beneficiate at various interventions within that value chain. And, of course, in terms of what we call extended producer responsibility, we holding producers responsible for the products that they produce. So products that are toxic, products that have an impact on the environment, we're saying producers need to be responsible for the end-of-life management of those products. And then we take this a little bit broader in terms of a developing economy context, and including the waste hierarchy, which I spoke about. We also look at other aspects, and this is in terms of empowerment of previously disadvantaged individuals, job creation and SMME and cooperatives development, and issues around data management, information, statistics, and how we move forward with the management of information. This is couched very well in terms of the National Waste Management Strategy of 2009, which had 8 goals, and I'm not going to go through all of that, Chair, but specifically around goal 3, which is grow the contribution of the waste sector to the green economy. So there's an economic focus here around waste beneficiation, around job creation, and general contribution to the green economy. We've taken that further to talk about a recycling economy and a circular economy and so forth, that from waste a number of jobs can be created, from waste wealth can be created, from waste we can make a lot of business. Going forward in terms of the economic instruments that have been designed to enable the sound implementation of industry waste management plans, the department, through the Waste Act amendment process in 2014, also designed and developed a national pricing strategy for the management of waste. And really the intent and objectives of the pricing strategy was to mainstream the polluter pays principle. So the National Environmental Management Act, NEMA, is based on essentially two principles. One is the polluter pays principle, and the other one is a precautionary principle relating to environmental protection. Polluter-based principle, we're taking it forward in terms of mainstreaming it, putting a price on waste, saying that through this mechanism of disincentives and incentives, we can reduce the generation of waste, we can increase diversion away from landfill sites. Once you put a price on waste, people are not going to readily throw that away to landfill sites, but we will incentivize the reuse, recycling, and recovery once we have an appropriate value that's ascribed to a waste stream. And then the support of the growth of the South African secondary resources economy, where we're saying waste is actually not waste, it's a resource. Moving forward in terms of the Waste Act amendment, we also provided for a new institutional mechanism through Section 34 of the Act that provides for the establishment of a Waste Management Bureau as a public entity, acting in terms of a specialist implementation agent within the department with a primary function to manage the disbursement of incentives which I spoke about, funding, identify and promote best practice in the industry in terms of minimization of waste, reuse, recycling, and recovery of waste. And the main role being that of monitoring the implementation of various industry plans, and the one that we have currently running is the Thai plan. And in terms of this, we wanted to really start improving the governance around these industry plans, and specifically through the Waste Management Bureau. Chair, we go now into the Section 28 notice itself, details surrounding the comments that we've received from the industry and some of the rationale in terms of the extensions that have been granted and the consultation period that we are in at the moment. So some of the comments, and I'm summarizing them in terms of the most important ones, relates to industry asking us to provide for various definitions on lighting equipment, a definition of paper. We think that it's straightforward that we know what paper is. Apparently it can be complex with different types of paper, different grades, different qualities, and so forth. Definition of processing, definition of packaging, and the definition of what is a producer. Moving on with the summary of comments. Chair?
Sorry to interject. You say there are people who say they don't know what paper is. They want it to be properly defined. Oh, okay. Can there be something else that is referred to paper which is not paper? I'm just asking a layman's question.
Yeah, thanks for that, Chair. Yeah, you know, we also understood that, you know, it could be a layman general understanding what paper is. Our engagement with the industry, Chair, is that it's quite a complex industry. It's very involved. You have all kinds of grades of paper that's produced. So if I could go into it. So if we say paper and we don't say that it's cardboard. So if we say paper and we don't say cardboard, you can assume that whenever we refer to paper that they're also including cardboard. So one example of how we need to start defining clearly what we mean by paper and the different grades and so forth. So the other issue was relating to a scope of a trading document. So we put in this provision mainly as a mechanism for tracing and tracking of waste streams and so forth. So industry is saying that this could be quite a cumbersome requirement because does it mean they put on a certain waste stream products, a company name with the company registration number, or do we require other types of trading document numbers and so forth? So very, I'm an example to use here. If something comes in through an import-export arrangement, we should have some type of a documentation or a number there that we could indeed trace this thing back to source. So we had an interesting example last week, where we found some stuff that's been illegally disposed of. The fact that it had a number on it, we were able to trace it back to source and directly to a company. So this is what we are engaging the industry with right now in terms of making it less onerous, but at the same time making them understand that there is a need that we want to track products. Industry also queried the 12-month period to develop a plan, which they said was too short, and they wanted more time. And the last part was a 70% requirement as part of the plan. So this 70% requirement is a 70% requirement of producers. So we're saying that to develop such a plan, you must have at least 70% of all producers within the plan. Part of this rationale, Chair, is that if we don't have such types of requirements, you can imagine that anybody and everybody in the country can then submit plans to the minister. And really, this needs to go to talk to the intention and objectives of the plan that of industry waste management plans that I highlighted earlier, to say it's an industry plan. Industry needs to get themselves organized. The sector itself needs to get themselves organized. It's not intended that we will have hundreds of plans. It's not intended that every company can submit a plan, but it's a sector-based plan. So it's envisaged that, yes, within a sector, and if we can take packaging, that there will be a few plans. But we cannot have a situation where we now must manage and monitor hundreds of plans from hundreds of companies who are producers in the paper and packaging sector, as an example. Then moving forward, there also was a requirement for us to define product responsibility organizations, or what we call PROs. A PRO is actually part of the value chain relating to extended producer responsibility. And what happens when an industry sector gets themselves organized in what is called a product responsibility organization, and that becomes the mechanism of how industry is organized to, as a vehicle, to take forward the implementation of that particular plan. Incentive schemes, say, must be defined, and the Act makes provision for incentive schemes, and they wanted some more definition around it. The aspect of free riders. So free riders are companies that really ride on the back of other companies. So you can have an industry sector that's organized and say about 80% of the companies there will comply, and 20% will say, okay, no, you guys are compliant, we will just go along with you. And the requirement was that how do we ensure compliance of free riders? Separation at source and a requirement for possible legislation or other mechanisms to force waste separation at source. And this is what we're discussing a lot with COCTA and local government in terms of how this can be enabled. The costing model, which cost model will be used to fund the industry plan, and that we will talk to a bit later as well. Again, more comments relate to empowerment of previously disadvantaged individuals. They say it's outside the scope of the Waste Act, and we're saying in terms of National Waste Management Strategy, which I highlighted, Goal 3 specifically talks to enterprise development, SMMEs, and the empowerment of previously disadvantaged individuals. The informal sector's inclusion in the plan, to what extent we will include the informal sector, and in this case, the waste pickers, compliance and enforcement issues within the plan, and objection to the inclusion of offences. So in the latest draft of the notice, which was published for comment, we have a section on offences, and we say it's an offence if you're not part of the plan, and there's penalties and all of that. We've been discussing this with our legal division, and there may be a consideration that the fact that it's already included in the bigger Waste Act, that there was no need to, for us to repeat this part in the notice itself. Moving on, Chair, in terms of consultation, we're now in the consultation period where we've published the notice for comments, we've received comments, we've gone through the register, we've made certain engagements with the industry in terms of how we're going to address the comments, and there was also a request for further engagement and further consultation with the industry, and we are doing that at the moment. And the considerations at the moment before us, Chair, is as follows: the removal of the provision to include a registration number on all trading documents. We think it's very cumbersome, and it's possible that we could use another mechanism, for instance, the registration number of a company to be provided as a substitute. Registration limited to only producers, including a time frame for responding to the registration of producers, and I'll go through that in a moment. The removal of the 70% requirement, address the issues surrounding the 30 days for registration, and also address the time period, which was 3 months. And I'll give you in a moment what is the new time frames. So this particular notice was a notice that was published on the 12th of August for implementation. On the 12th of September, there was a deadline for registration as producers. The deadline for submission of plans was the 12th of November. So it was really the 30 days for registration and the 3 months for submission of plans, which took us until November 2016. And here again, Chair, the rationale, and I remember the meeting earlier this year, and the question around the extension was that industry plans have been provided for in the Waste Act of 2009. The National Waste Management Strategy, which is enabling guideline and strategy, also 2009. The Waste Tire Regulations, drafted in 2009. And it's so many years later, and we really were wanting to start implementing plans as early as possible, but we've understand the reasons from industry in terms of extensions, and so they've asked us again now for a further extension, and I'll talk to those in a moment in terms of exactly what the extension is. So during this period also, Chair, the 2014 Waste Act amendment came into force, requiring the national pricing strategy to be published, and this was done on the 11th of August 2016 as well, which is the an enabling instrument to support the development of industry waste management plans. I spoke to the tire amendment regulations, which was also published on the 11th of August, that really talks to the alignment of the RDISA plan and the alignment in terms of the Waste Act amendment of 2014 provisions for a transitional and alignment period relating to the RDISA plan, which I'll go through in detail as well later. So in terms of consultation, I'm moving into consultation just to say how we were addressing the comments. We've had a workshop in June this year, and it was a large part of industry sectors present there, and we engaged them on their concerns. And the concern on the 3 months period, we received, and a notice was amended for timeframes relating to the paper and packaging and lighting sector. So these two priority sectors indicated concerns on the 3 months period was too short, while the electrical and electronic sector agreed that, you know, they could comply with the timeframes. The department received approximately 20 written requests for extensions to timeframes. At the same time, we received a copy of a High Court application to challenge these timeframes by the RDISA waste tire plan, that these timeframes were also too short, and approximately 80 written inquiries on the final notice seeking clarity on various provisions were processed, and those provisions I've went through in detail in terms of some of the in terms of the comments that we received on these definitions and so forth. The discussion then is that these comments were comprehensively reviewed, comments and response register was developed, meetings were held with people that commented, people that had concerns, workshops were held, we've addressed some of the comments that they say were vague or there was a misunderstanding on certain provisions. We provided clarity to these comments, I mean to the people that commented, and we provide a detailed analysis in terms of a response to the comments. Moving forward in terms of these plans, again we said it's part of the extended producer responsibility concept. And again, the plans not for individual companies, but for a group of companies within the sector, and hence the requirement for the 70% rationale. Consultation process, really we're dealing with complex sectors, and I've given you one example of what we think is paper and apparently is not so simple and straightforward. Extension of timeframes, we're saying, does not result in any non-compliance by any companies or sectors involved, and it's mainly due to the operation of plans where manufacturers who are not members of the plan will be non-compliance with the legislation. So, essentially, the notice calls for all producers that produce, in one sector, as an example, paper and packaging, producers must belong to a plan, an approved plan. If they do not belong to an approved plan, it becomes an offense and a non-compliance. So, Chair, I went through the issue surrounding the 30 days and the 90 days. A decision was taken following comments from industry sectors like BUSA, And a decision was made to withdraw the original notice of 12th of September, and a new revised notice was published for public comment for 30 days on the 12th of September with new timeframes. So, Chair, these are the new timeframes. The new timeframes are essentially two aspects. One is a 12-month period for registration of producers, and another 12-month period after that for submission of plans. So this is what is currently out in the public domain. It's a 12-month period for registration that replaces the 3-month period, and another 12-month period for the submission plan, for the submission of plans. So effectively, from the date of final publication to the time we will receive final plans, it will be 24 months. Industry also requested further engagement on the notice before publishing, and we are busy with those engagements currently as well. So in terms of where we are, Chair, we envisage that this final notice will be published before the end of the year, if all goes well, in terms of the engagements, and that's the time frame that we have for the final publication of the notice. Then, Chair, moving on to the first industry waste management plan that this country embarked on, which is the RDISA waste tire plan. And the background to this is that in 2009, the department published regulations for the management of waste tires. It's a comprehensive suite of regulations that covers everything relating to the production of waste, the management of waste tires, the management of stockpiles, regulations relating to manufacturers of tires and disposal of tires as well. A call was made for submission of waste tire plans that took some time, and eventually in November 2012, the RDISA plan was approved, including targets for jobs, SMME development, tire recycling, and so forth. The plan effectively came into force in June 2013 in terms of full operationalizing of that plan was in June 2013. In June 2014, I spoke to a Waste Act amendment that was passed, which makes provision for the development of the national pricing strategy, the establishment of the bureau, and the development of the money bill. So essentially, what the Waste Act amendment requested as well was for a alignment of the RDISA plan in terms of the provisions of the Act. And the Act required a new approach to the tire levies, which previously was collected as waste or tire management fees, where producers and manufacturers of new tires would pay a management fee directly to RDISA, and RDISA would collect this fee and manage the collection, transportation, and processing of tires. A decision was taken through the amendment process that indeed this would be replaced by a tire levy, which would be then collected by SARS through the national fiscal system, and before that would happen, a pricing strategy need to be in place, and a money bill to support that would be in place as well. So in 2015, the waste tire levy was introduced by the Minister of Finance in his budget speech. An announcement was made in October 2016 that collection of this 230 per kilogram of waste tire would be introduced in 1st of October 2016, and subsequently that date was moved to the 1st of February 2017. Effectively, this replaces the management fee that RDISA would have collected directly by itself, and 1st of February will be a new dispensation where SARS will be collecting this fee through the fiscal system, disbursement, as I indicated earlier, through the Waste Management Bureau, directly to what we call product responsibility organizations and this would cover all waste streams, including the waste tire waste stream as well. Part of this, then, in terms of transitional arrangements, required an alignment of the existing plan to this new dispensation, whereby RDISA would not be collecting the plan and, not be collecting those fees, whereby SARS would be collecting those fees. This entailed transitional arrangements for us to review the plan of RDISA, amend the plan, and also amend the waste tire regulation. So, for instance, there is a provision in the waste tire regulation that empowers RDISA to collect management fees directly from producers. That clause had to be changed and removed so that we would not have two systems of collection, but the SARS tire levy would be the replacement in terms of that tire levy. So essentially, that is the main part of the alignment process of getting the RDISA plan aligned and reviewed in terms of the new provisions entailed in the Waste Management Act of 2014. Combined with that, Chair, was a midterm performance review of the RDISA plan from June 2013. We had 3 or 2.5 years of performance with external financial reports, and we conducted a midterm performance review of RDISA against the plan that they submitted to the department. And the performance review covers quite a few areas. One is governance. How well is the plan being managed in terms of internal arrangements, external arrangements, fiduciary duties, compliance with all other relevant legislation relating to governance. The targets in terms of job creation, are targets being met? Issues surrounding finance and management of that tire fee. Issues surrounding SMME development and cooperatives, support to waste tire processes. So there is an element where tires can be processed into what we call tire-derived fuel, pyrolysis oil, rubber crumb, and so forth. And the question was, are our processes in the country being empowered and the infrastructure being provided to support these processes? And it's the recycling infrastructure that we talk about. And then generally, to look at performance against any deviation from the plan that was submitted and approved in 2012. Subject to the outcome of the performance review, Chair, corrective and remedial measures will be instituted. This performance audit is currently underway. There's been issues relating to the submission of evidence, information, and other information pertinent to the plan. There's issues relating to the disclosure of financial information in what is known as a not-for-profit company, and also in terms of what is termed private companies, and that is what we're managing at the moment. We envisage that the audit should be over within the next month or so, and after we receive the full report, we will then undertake the corrective and remedial measures that needs to be instituted to bring the plan into alignment in terms of the amended Waste Act of 2014. So this is my last slide, and the recommendation is that Portfolio Committee take note of the progress made in terms of the implementation of these industry waste management plans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. I see you have missed some of the slides on RDISA, but you covered them on the summary. So I think the summary has covered some of the few slides that we missed. yeah. So that is that, colleagues. That's the presentation of the industry waste plans. Any questions
Honourable Edward and Honourable Kekana.
Thank you, Chair. I prepared a couple of questions, and I had to go ask for a phone call, so I don't know if maybe you mentioned it. If you did, I'm terribly sorry. Okay. okay, so I think there's two that I want to ask specifically out of the four. Why is Regisa exempt from publishing a more comprehensive annual report that gives a detailed breakdown of its income streams and expenditure? I understand that it's registered as an NPC, so it's not required by law to do so, but because it's an entity specifically, you know, for us, anyway, so, I mean, consumers specifically are effectively underwriting it through the levy, which I think, if I read correctly somewhere, it's 2 rand 30 plus VAT, so per kilogram. So if my research isn't right, I'm sorry. So effectively, it's tax, okay? We can say it's tax. I think specifically the committee would then be entitled, but the community as well, but specifically the committee would be entitled to know exactly how that's spent. And then the second one is how many responses have been received to the recent request of renewed business plans from potential tire processes. I remember we spoke about that last time as well, just all touched on it.
What potential?
Sorry, sir?
You said how many? I didn't get...
Oh, I wanted to know how many responses have they received to the recent request for renewed business plans from the potential tire processes. Okay, when will they be evaluated, and will the approved processes names and the processes of this be published on Redisa's website? Then the last one I'll ask is, has the forensic audit of Redisa by the department been completed? And then maybe just give us some, if it has or not, just elaborate on that a bit. Sorry, I read most of it, but I forgot most of the questions. Okay, that's fine for now. Thanks. Sir.
Okay. Got basically three questions. Honorable Kekana and Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. My question is on paper and packaging for recycling. What is your comment on disposal of tempers which are not recycled but thrown away?
Tempers?
Yes.
Okay.
That's question
for the baby.
They block the storm water pipes, are thrown in the landfills or dumping sites. What is the responsibility of industry in this regard? And the community, what can the department do to address this problem? My other question, do we have a long-term waste management strategy that outlines how much of waste should go to landfill sites and recycling? What does our strategy say about waste management in 2030 or 2050.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Kekana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to welcome the presentation has been done by the committee, the entity, and also note the progress that have been made. I've got only one question because one has been asked by
the there seems to be the speakers are not a bit high, so if you can speak next, or speak louder at least.
okay, Chairperson, thank you very much.
I said, Chairperson, I welcome the presentation from the entity. Also, we take note of the progress that have been made by them in terms of the implementation of the industrial waste management plans. I've got only one question, as Honorable Edward has asked one of my questions. Now, how does the concept extended producer responsibility work in practice when certain products that ends up as waste are manufactured outside South Africa, such as textile products? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makubele.
Thanks, Chair. Let me raise three questions. One relates to the plans, development of the plans, strictly by the industry. And while at the same time encouraging EEE development, SMEs and so on. What does it mean? Is it not limiting the new entrants onto the industry when you're insisting on the plans? Or let me rather put it this way. You're not encouraging everybody to can come up with these plans, meaning that you are likely to have those who are currently in the industry to be the ones who bring this particular plan, effectively maintaining the status quo. Or how does that bring about transformation of that particular industry in the main? The second question. You're saying on one of the slides that the collection of the waste tire levy, my SARS, will be the 1st of February, meaning they are not going to be starting with the financial year, because the financial year, isn't it, is supposed to be what? March. Is it February? It's February. It's a
First of April
for government. But in terms of SARS, SARS does not conclude in February. Yes, and then start 1st of March. I'm just saying there's no technicality, if you get what I'm raising. Yes. And I'm not saying that if we are to start any time during the year, we can't start. I'm just saying, is there no implication if you just start when you were supposed to be starting with the year? If that. The last point, Chair, right on that very slide, about the department conducting the midterm performance review of REDISA, with all that which we have referred to, the SME development, support to waste processes, job creation, finance, all of the governance issues, when is that process going to conclude? When are you concluding that? I know that you're talking that subject to the outcome of the performance review, you will act accordingly, but I'm just saying when decisively are you concluding that particular process? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Khadeg. Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Makubele has just asked the other one that I wanted to ask about the significance of starting collecting the levy on the 1st of February. I think he will give us a response to that one. The other one, Chair, while we are still discussing the issue of waste management, there was an issue of the order in Eshongweni landfill site, which is managed by EnviroSelf. And there was an agreement between the department and EnviroSelf to implement the 11 action plan. I just want to know how far they are implementing that plan. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Mabilo.
No, thanks, Chair. My first one, I'll be brief this time. The first one is a comment. We note the progress on the implementation of the industry waste plan. We noted progress, and for me personally, I'm deeply encouraged. Now, you talk about 40 waste streams identified in the country, and then we are focusing currently on three, if not more. But I'm interested in what timeline is envisaged for the rollout of the other waste streams out of this 40 in the context of effective utilization of waste and the economic benefit of waste, such as empowerment, job creation, enterprise development. Now, this one for me, the separation of at source, for me, I consider this as a low-hanging fruit. Because if you go to the airports, most of them, and some of the industries, waste is separated at source. It's separated. This green is for this yellow is for that, black is for that. But where it matters most is at the residential area, from the homes. We find it so difficult to separate at source at that level. So, by when? Because for me, this is a snail's pace. By when are we going to launch this separation at waste, at least at a pilot level, and then roll it out? Because that one is not scientific. I mean, it's not difficult. Just different plastics, green for this, black for that, white for that. What is difficult about that? And then that will be linked to, if we are so slow for that, how will we deal with our vision in one of the pages around Southern Africa integration and waste management, etc., if we are slow at that level. Now, my last question, two questions, will relate to the development. Roughly, is there a projection, if possible, around what Treasury stands to collect per annum from the waste tire levy when it becomes operational? If you are not in a position to respond to that, if it is subject to care, you can leave it. Okay, and then I know there's a problem around ring fencing from National Treasury. I know it's a gray area. But I just want to check, would the funding for the environmental sector improve if environmental levies are envisaged, are ring fenced? If yes, are there talks between environmental affairs and the National Treasury in this regard? But if it is also subject to care, you can leave it. I'm just flagging those questions. But at least what I introduced first, the implementation of the industry waste management plan, yeah, I'm comfortable with that progress. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mabil. You know, this separation at source, it's happening in most areas, in most countries. And as Honorable Mabilu says, it's something that would not require extensive infrastructure to begin to roll out. I think it's probably something that we can look at, but give us a response to that. Even at the airport and other areas where it's supposed to be separated, sometimes it becomes difficult for one to pick up where is the plastic supposed to be thrown in, where is paper. It's not properly marked. And I don't think there is enough effort that is being put into that. Even when there is a government functions, when there is other functions where you can easily do that, I don't think it's been prioritized, but of course you will give us a response. But it's something that can happen very quickly. Maybe probably the reason is after having separated
plastic, from paper, from this, where then do you take it to? It might probably be the issue that you separate them, but they end up at same place. So, yeah, you'll then speak to that. But this 70%, are you saying, Mark, that it has been amended since? Because initially it was in the draft, and then I see that it has not, it does look like it has been taken out, but you'll confirm that. 24 months, what informs the 24 months? It's 2 years. It's a very long period. First, you require industries to register. It takes them 12 months to register, and then another 12 months to submit the plan. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's too long. I mean, are we saying that industry needs 12 months just to register? One registration. I think it's a matter that we must really look at, Mark. Because the sooner you implement, let's just focus here actively. Look, and I think Mark may you make it a point that this was it the act, it said 2009, promulgated the waste act. And now we're in 2016 now. And we're talking about a further 2 years. I think that would be unacceptable. I think you must, if it means you must engage with the industry, you must do that so that you can reduce the. The period is just too much. If it is them who said we need 1 year to register, do you really need 1 year to fill up the forms and register and whatever and talk together as industry? So if you can just respond to that, and of course the issue of Redisa, I think you'll respond to it. But lastly for me, of course this is the horses have bolted. A decision has been taken to introduce the levy and so forth and so forth, and Treasury has done, is in the process of doing that. I'm just worried about if it takes us 24 months to put up the industry plans and to approve them and to get them running, and then in the meantime Treasury collects. Of course they are starting with the tire levy now. We don't know when are they going. They might start collecting next year on the other waste streams. But are we certain that we have got all the money that will be collected by National Treasury through SARS will be able to be reinvested back into the industry so that the industry can be able, so that we can move towards that green economy that you were talking about? So are we confident that that is going to be the situation? Of course, taking into account that nothing is ring-fenced, there's only one kitty, and there's only one mechanism of allocating expenditure. So, but of course, from the side of maybe this talks to the speed at which you are going to operationalize the bureau, Mark. The speed of operationalizing the bureau so that it can start working, and then it can start looking at all of these things. Sure. A couple of questions, so if you can respond to them.
Thanks, Chair. To Honorable Edwards, and thanks everybody for those very important questions. Relating to the annual report of Redisa, so I understand, Honorable Edwards, it's relating to the financial reports, right? So Redisa is a not-for-profit company. They have internal reports, financial reports, and also external financial reports. And those are obviously made public. And so we have requested for them, and this is part of the performance review that I spoke to, where all of these are being assessed and analyzed. So we have those financial reports in terms of the not-for-profit company. I'm not sure if you know, but the plan is in the public domain, that the way they manage this plan, the implementation of the plan, is through a management company. And the management company is a private company. So there are issues relating to how much of information one can obtain from the private company and versus the not-for-profit company. But in terms of those financial reports from Reducer NPC, we have received them, and we are analyzing them, and it's part of the performance audit on Reducer. So we'll have those reports, the finalization of the report, I said, by the end of the month, and we hope all goes well in terms of that. And the process started actually in February this year, and there's been quite a comprehensive process of huge amounts of data, reports, and all of that to be assessed and analyzed, and we are concluding that with the audit company within the next few weeks. Honorable Edwards, you were talking about responses from other tire producers' business plans. I'm not sure if I understand it. Is this from Reducer itself, or?
Sorry. It's. I don't know if you remember a couple of months ago when we spoke about it. There's like the local guys that need to give business plans to Reducer, etc., you know, for that processing, the kind of the middleman, if I can call it that.
Okay, so it's a Reducer requirement. Okay, so what Reducer does is it does advertise from time to time for tire producers to submit business plans for waste tires. They adjudicate on those plans, and they provide tires to those processors for free. And we understand that there's a number of processes that they do supply tires to. There was a concern and complaints relating to some processes not getting tires. And we have raised that with Reducer, and essentially what's coming to the fore is that we've done our own audit and inspection of processes in terms of their capability to produce tires. One of the issues that we busy analyzing is where Reducer is saying that there isn't enough processing capacity to deliver on quality, safety, and all of that relating to South African processes. And that is why they do a very careful analysis before they give tires to a processor. So they must know for sure that the processor is capable of processing that in terms of providing the certain quality and all of that. So they have their terms and a whole list of requirements before they adjudicate, but it's quite a long adjudication process. We were concerned that it was not happening fast enough, and so that is also part of this performance audit. We've done our own work in terms of assessing readiness of processes, but that will come out in the final report as well. Yeah, so that's Reducer matter, and then it will be part of the comprehensive report that we will make available. Honorable Kakana, the issue relating to diapers, nappies, pampers, and you're right, it's quite a big problem in the country. We've spoken about that in this committee before, and what we've done is that we've summoned that industry. And there are basically two producers in this country. It's Kimberly-Clark and Procter & Gamble that produce all, manufacture all the nappies in the country. And we know the issue relating to the impact on the environment. It's quite a nuisance waste stream. To that extent, we've undertaken an agreement with Procter & Gamble. And what's happening is that we've signed an MOU with them, where they have undertaken to provide infrastructure for recycling of nappies. So we've seen it. Nappies can be recycled completely and made into new nappies. We've seen the process. It's quite a simple process, actually. The plastic is taken one side, recycled, and the fiber is taken another side, washed, cleaned, disinfected, made into new nappies. And what we're thinking about, Chair, is that we may call for a special industry plan for nappies only, and included in that for other sanitary hygiene waste streams as well. And there's technology that's recently been made available. We don't have it yet in this country. It's been implemented in the U.S., but these companies have undertaken that they can assist with a pilot demonstration plant to be put up in South Africa to demonstrate that this can be done. So, Chair, here again, the issue here is that does government have to do all of this thing? You know, when we come to extended producer responsibility, the onus is on the producer to take responsibility for the waste stream. So government can come and go down a very, very long route of putting in place very expensive infrastructure and all of that. We're asking, is that the role of government? Or should the role of government be to put in place the enabling legislative framework in which these waste streams can be effectively managed and have co-benefits of job creation and you know, minimizing impact on the environment? So that we will certainly like to come back, Chair, and then give you some progress on that. It's an exciting area that we are engaging with the private sector to deal with the problematic waste stream. The issue of the long-term strategy moving forward in terms of where we're going, the National Waste Management Strategy does have some targets for SMME development and for recycling. We currently have a recycling target of 25% up to the MTSF is up to 2019. So if we're working off a base, 2009 baseline was referring to 10%, we've really more than doubled our game and up the game down up to a 25% waste diversion or recycling target by 2019 in terms of outcome 10 MTSF target. Then, Honourable Member, the issue relating to EPR and how does EPR work. So it's extended producer responsibility. It's a worldwide thing across the whole OECD, Europe, US, all over. They approach waste management through EPR and other types of instruments like product stewardship, designing for the environment, sound material society. They are very advanced approaches. But EPR puts the onus back to industry, puts the cost back to industry. And so the tire levy is actually an EPR scheme. The issue relating to the other waste streams that we want to manage as well, like electronic waste, is EPR. So we're telling that Sony's, the Dells, the Ericssons of the world, you're producing toxic products. When these things come to the end of their life, you must take the responsibility of making sure that they manage in an environmentally friendly manner. Government will put the legislation in place, and we're doing more than that. We actually making it law. We're putting a compulsory obligation on industry to manage their waste products. So on textile products, it will be the same thing, Chair, that all products, whether they imports, exports, companies that bring in computers, cell phones, these things are not manufactured here. They are all imports. All of these imports, including textiles, will be subjected to the industry plan. And that is why you'll see one of the comments there relating to how we address importers and the producers. So, for instance, the tire plan that we have currently through RDSA also requires importers to pay the tire levy as well. Honorable Makabela. Yeah, I understood your concern, I think more through a question and a comment relating to how we manage the readiness to really deploy and have ambitious targets around SMMEs and, you know, broad-based economic empowerment in terms of a readiness and appetite for that versus where some industries are already playing the field and they can get going as quickly as possible. What we're saying, Jay, in terms of the National Waste Management Strategy, the goals, we have a serious concern around transformation of the sector as well. And we're saying if it is possible that the sector can indeed demonstrate transformation through previously disadvantaged individuals, empowerment of them, and it's contained in the Acts, and the functions of the Waste Bureau as well speak specifically to that element. And when we had the parliamentary hearings here, there was a very clear concern around transformation of the sector. So, for instance, an industry plan, if Minister calls for the plans, number of plans are submitted, assessment of those plans will be in a number of areas. One is to what extent infrastructure will be provided, to what extent targets ambitious, and to what extent transformation is embraced. So those will be considerations under which a plan will be assessed and approved. Your concern around the 1st of February, Chair, I don't have the full rationale for that, but it's a statement or an announcement that was made by the Minister of Finance, specifically relating to the collection of 1st of February. It was made just before, well, the end of September, before the 1st of October deadline, and that's the announcement that was made 1st February. I hear you in terms of, you know, there's a company financial year end, which is end of February. There's a government financial year end, which is end of March.
I thought I will see that on the medium-term budget policy statement. I missed that one. Probably still coming on the actual budget speech next year. But it may be that is the 1st of February. I think it's, you may be right. It may be 1st of March. I don't know. I don't think there is absolute clarity. Should we just conclude like that, Mark? But we don't have absolute clarity. It is coming, but we don't know whether it's 1st February or 1st March. Can we say that?
Sure. What we can say is that we can refer to the media statement. There was a media statement released by the Ministry of Finance that spoke specifically to 1st of Feb. We can put it up for you. If someone's on News 24, you can find it. There was a media statement made by the Minister of Finance.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was a postponement of the 1st of October initial date.
Because our understanding is that this levy has been processed by the Standing Committee on Finance. And at a particular point, they will come to the House. Either they will come as part of the package of the minister, or they will then be introduced before that. And then we'll get the actual date from there. Okay? All right, Matt.
Thanks, Chair. Moving on to Honorable Khademba's concern relating to EnviroServe. Yes, this question was asked the last time, and we said there were corrective measures in place. We're happy to convey to you now, Chair, that there was a compliance notice issued on EnviroServe last two Fridays ago. It's required for major corrective remedial measures with almost a total shutdown of the plant relating to what is known as Type 1 hazardous waste. So the 11-point plan was included in the final compliance notice issued by the Green Scorpions. And it is very serious corrective measures with a whole host of timeframes where EnviroServe is required to submit in information. Attached to that, Chair, is also criminal investigations into the operations of EnviroServe, and our Green Scorpions are managing that process as well. And I think there's a media statement that's been put out by the department relating to this compliance notice that was issued to EnviroServe. Honourable Mabilo, the progress relating to waste streams. So we identified it's about 38, but about 40 waste streams. And as society evolves, you know, and we get more modern and also more complex, you know, they say that there's about 300 new chemicals that's introduced in the world every month. Synthetic chemicals. With that comes new products. With that will come new waste streams, more complex waste streams. So we have, you know, currently about 40 of these waste streams. The way we prioritize it is in terms of a number of factors. Number one is the size of the waste stream. what is the impact in terms of volumes that are going to landfill site. So our primary focus is to divert waste away from landfill site. Waste disposal or landfill disposal must be the very last option. So we prioritize as a government the three waste streams and the tire waste streams as problematic waste streams, the large volume waste streams, but also waste streams that give us good incentives, economic incentives. But it doesn't mean that other waste streams are not being addressed. So for instance, if I can name a few, plastic bags. There's a levy that's been introduced. We're curtailing the nuisance that plastic bags used to be in the environment. Glass bottles, there's a very high recycling rate relating to glass bottles, and there's a glass recycling company that manages this with some other companies. Collector Can, which deals with aluminium beverage cans, a very high recycling rate that's there. These plastic bottles, which are PET bottles, it's a special type of plastic which can be recycled about 100 times over. Been managed by a few companies, Petco, Impact, and a few others that have quite a high amount of recycling rate attributed to that. So I think, Chair, that the way we will move with this is that there are learnings and lessons to be learnt with the first industry plan, which is the Ladisa tire plan. Lessons learned from there will go on to the next suite of industry plans. Lessons learned from that will be, we continue to learn and evolve with the industry in terms of, you know, the development of these plans, the success of these plans, and the ease of implementation of the plans, and the Waste Bureau will be key in terms of that. Then, separation of source. We all feel the same, Honorable Mapilo, and we hear your concern around that. So this is what we've been doing, and let me frame the problem statement here, and I think to some extent the chairs articulated it, that we could go and very nobly, and we've researched a number of models on how to do this, and already there are municipalities and metros in this country that have started pilot programs, whether it's Pick It Up, Tswan have done it, City of Cape Town have done it, a number of them have done and instituted various models around separation at source. The next question is, once the waste is separated, what then happens with the separated waste streams? So the City of Cape Town, many years ago, when I used to live here as well, we separate our waste, plastic, paper, packaging, glass. The municipality comes, collects all three separated bags, put it in one truck, and goes dispose off to landfill. So infrastructure, back-end infrastructure. The question is local government organized to have the back-end infrastructure to deal with this? So previously I spoke about a radical transformation in the value chain. That means you get a big 8-ton truck that comes to your curbside, using a lot of diesel, a lot of maintenance on that vehicle. 10 guys coming there to pick up your bin, put it into an 8-ton truck, drive 40 kilometers away to put it in a landfill site. Is that efficient? Now, we're turning the entire thing on its head to say that even local governments have to rethink the way they manage waste. So if we are to recycle waste streams, for instance, and you have there's some paper bag, it's a plastic bag for paper, another one for glass, another one for tins and whatever, as one model. Another model that's been developed in the Australia is basically two bags, one for recyclables, one for non-recyclables. The issue here is that you have to change even your vehicle fleet to manage this. You're not going to come now with an 8-ton truck to take a 400-liter wheelie bin. You will have to reorganize your fleet to bring in smaller vehicles. And it'll be about volume and not weight. So the issue around kitchen waste and what we call organic waste is a weight issue. But the issue around these things, empty bottles, empty cardboard boxes, plastic, is not weight, it's volume. So you can't bring 8-ton truck. You rather bring a 3-ton truck that has a very, very big bin at the back that can take a lot of volume, not necessarily weight. Now, these are the kind of things, Chair, we've been talking to local government. We have a pilot program in Tshwane. We've signed an MOU with the city. We've engaged with them in terms of a pilot program on waste separation at source. So we've developed a model bylaw, like we have a bylaw for collection standards for waste collection from local government. We have a separation at source guideline. The imposition of such a guideline or a bylaw that must be developed or implemented at local government is a function of local government or that metro concerned. So we can force a separation of waste law, and the next day you'll create chaos in the country because will we have the infrastructure to deal with those waste streams? But it's a massive opportunity to start looking at that value chain and the aspect of enterprise development, SMMEs, co-ops, public-private partnerships with local government in a completely new area of transfer stations, intermediary stations, what we call material recycling facilities, waste beneficiation centers, recycling centers, all of these things before it can go for disposal. So it's an area for economic opportunity, and our discussion with COCTA is that local government wants to also play in the space. So for instance, a problem statement also relates to municipalities.
Summary.
Okay, you know, it's, I like this. It's very passionate about these things. Okay.
For the whole morning.
Okay. So the tire levy, the total amount, we don't have that yet. When we have the final figures from our report, we can make that available. Ring fencing chair, our CFO is here. She will talk to that aspect. We hear you, chair, on the period, and we think that we need to consider that in terms of what you're saying to us, it being too long, and the final notice has not been published yet. We are busy putting together our response to the minister, and the minister will make a decision in terms of the of the period. Thanks, Chair. I'll hand over to CFO. We'll talk to the ring fencing. And I think, sorry, the one aspect is the reinvestment. Yeah. You're going to talk to
them? No, just answering the DG to say that we can try, once we've received, you know, like your plan, make a submission to National Treasury, either for ring fencing. You said a guarantee. But I was just saying to her, normally you just get an allocation, the, you know, like MIMCO budget or the budget committee allocation. But we can, you know, like tell National Treasury, you know, write to National Treasury and say this is how much you need per annum. And I was referring to the plastic levy that is collected by National Treasury to say we just get an allocation haphazardly. I think it's about 50 million per annum. And I think National Treasury collects 180 million. 200 million. So we only get 30. But once these, you know, like waste management plans, you know, can be quantified properly, I think we can make a business case to National Treasury.
It goes to fees plus fall. Can't want to say something.
There was one question. When are you concluding the midterm?
So he said end of the month. He said end of November. Mm. Did you say end of November? That's what I had to say. Okay. Any comment before I wrap up on this one so that we can get to the next one?
Thank you, Chair. I think the issues that I wanted to talk to briefly, Mark has summarized, is around the 24-month time frame. He has said we'll look at it. I think in engagements with Minister, there was a discussion that there are processes that can run concurrently, and we must try and find a way of shortening that period to at least 12 months, not 24 months, so that we don't wait for the whole registration to end before we start.
I think that will support. 2 years is quite long for for registration 12 months and then submission of plans. So 12 months, something that will be supported. Anyway, in summary, I think, anyway, we were still thinking whether shouldn't we have waste management as a subject for interrogation in our next colloquium in January, February. I think we should do that. It's quite exciting because we're talking about the industry waste plans and so forth. So I think we should. We should have it as a doc. We must start working on this thing as our subject for the next colloquium. You want to comment?
I'm not sure if you know, but we've also embarked on the PAKISA process for waste management.
Okay.
So in January, February, we will be hosting, we'll be starting the pre-lab processes, also the way we've done oceans and biodiversity. So it'll be a nice, at the right time to engage at the time.
Yeah. No, we will. We will engage January, February, I think February, to have that colloquium. You know, the colloquiums, I don't know whether members have, you see, it's a good learning platform for members, even for those who are in the industry, because they come across new ideas. Last week we were presented by the professor and two of the academics from the UCT on a research paper that they are doing on the impact or the effectiveness of the mitigation policies of South Africa as part of our climate change response. It raised quite some interesting issues, which some of it controversial about the triangle, but information which is very good feedback to those who are in the policy development and policy implementation space. So this colloquium are very good learning platforms. And I'm sure members also have picked up one or two things from that. So we'll do it the waste thing in February. Well, maybe we must wait for the department to conclude the process. I hear Honorable Edwards calling it a forensic, and then Mark, you're calling it a performance audit. So let's wait for you to conclude your performance audit, and then you'll then come and share with us what are the outcomes of that performance audit. The question that Honorable Edward has raised, whether is it possible for DISA to publish the annual report and subject that to scrutiny, I think it's a matter that as a committee probably we must take advice on it. Redisa is a non-profit company. It's the NPCA. It's a non-profit company which is performing a public function. I take this to be a public function that they're performing. They are empowered by a plan which has been approved by the minister. And that plan has been provided for in the legislation. So everything that is happening there is happening in a public space. An act of parliament is empowering Redisa to do what the collection and to implement the plan, collecting the levy from the industry. Industries are compelled to pay that levy in terms of legislation. So I see the whole thing operating within a space where if that function is then performed in a manner that is being performed, I see no reason why that cannot be subject to public scrutiny. That's my take, honorable members. I don't know what is your view. So I think we'll have to take some advice on this, and then if possible, then look into the possibility then of inviting Redisa to come and talk to us about the issues on annual report and so forth. But we don't want to do that while the department is still busy. So maybe it's advisable to allow the department to conclude by the end of November. And then once the department is ready, they can come and brief us. But I think after that briefing or simultaneous with that briefing, we must find a way of having to engage with Redisa on their performance of this public function. Is that a proper summary, honorable members? So thank you very much, Mark, for the briefing. As soon as you are ready, then you'll then come and brief us on the outcomes of your performance audit. But next year, February, we'll then further interrogate the issues around waste management, the industry waste plans, and so forth. So we will invite industry as well in these colloquiums. So they may want to engage with the department, critically so. That will be a forum for Festival of Ideas, where we'll be engaging with the main purpose of trying to understand the subject issue and to create a platform for even civil society to come in and raise their issues here in Parliament. So we'll do that in February. Thank you very much, Mark. I see Shoni is also here. We are not discussing biodiversity. Oh, the second quarter. Oh. Okay. All right. Acting DDG, you'll tell us what then to do. The last time we were supposed to get a presentation on the financials. All right. So I see the CFO is here, so she can take us through. Sorry, we forgot to remind members to bring their packages for last week. I don't have them with me. I hope members have made notes, but I'm sure you can project it on the slides. All right, sure.
Thank you, Chair. This is just a short presentation because it's only half a year. Next slide. So it's just expenditure by program, and then just to pull it down to economic classification, and to talk a little around the expanded works projects.
Let's go straight to the.
Yes. Okay. Basically, Chair, if you look at it for the 6 months, we've only spent 42%. And normally for the first quarter, we project around 22%, and then the second quarter about 23%. But we never project 50 or 51% because the first quarter is the slowest. And if I look at, the programs that are spending slowly, it's legal authorizations and compliance, which is DDG Isham Abada. And mainly the reasons that I was given there is that it is slow expenditure is on the establishment of on the ports of entry. And then the other slow expenditure is on chemicals and waste, and as DVG Mark has explained, you know, there's a lot of planning there, and he hasn't started like full speed. And those are the only slow ones. And then on expenditure per economic classification, I'd want to draw the attention of the members to the expenditure on expanded public works projects. That is the expenditure that is under scrutiny now, you know, like with the Auditor General. And I think there we are okay, we're at 41%. And that is the expenditure that is classified as households which were busy, where the AG is asking us to reclassify as goods and services. But otherwise, we are okay on expenditure for these 6 months. Next slide. And then for detailed current expenditure, I'll draw the attention to perhaps the consultants.
You can't see. Sorry, you can't see.
I can't see.
You need glasses. You'll need glasses like me. Look at this one next to you. Okay. Yeah, apologies. We should have reminded members, so we forgot. It's fine. It's not your fault. It's our fault.
Okay.
But we did say last time when we left that members must bring it. So we are aware that we are going to discuss it today.
Okay. On goods and services, the main expenditure on consultants, contractors, and agency support. The main expenditures were, related to the biodiversity, PAKISA, societies, COP, used the number of consultants there. And mainly the cost driver there is the agency, which is Smith Amanda for the oceans and coast. Yes. And then on travel and subsistence again, because those three, consultants, travel, and venues. We had our CITES COP, we've used a lot of consultants, there was a lot of travel, and mainly it was on local travel, just a little bit on foreign travel. The other expenditure is online, and as I said, it's also on 42%. And then we look at the graphical presentation, and that is just showing how we're trending, towards the 6 billion that has been allocated to the department, and I think we're trending well. And then the detail on consultants, contractors, you can see there, that slide? Yes, that one. I'm drawing the attention to the 33 million as well as the 67 million. You can see Smith Amanda there, manning the operation of the Algoa as well as, the SA Agalas II, going to the Antarctica Islands, research vessels, and whatever. So those are the main cost drivers in consultants and contractors. Otherwise, we've reduced a lot on use of consultants, except for this particular year, where we're doing the PAKISAs and the CITES. Next slide. I think there, again, the main expenditure is air charters. Remember, the ships, when they go to these islands, they're also accompanied by helicopters to offload from the ships. And the other slide is just showing us, next slide, the professional bodies that we are contributing to. On payment for capital assets, the main payment on our capital assets is not like laptops and computers. It's actually our green building. We pay about 10.4 million per month.
What?
10.4 million on our new building, the green building.
Oh, green building.
Yes.
Green building.
Very, very expensive. So that is the only cost driver that we have on capital. And at times it delays because I think for the first quarter, we pay in area. We stay and pay, the following year. So all the time there will be a shortfall of about 10.4 million. The next slide, I'm talking about our allocations and transfers to our public entities, that is also the main cost drivers on the for the department. You can see SANPAC, SANBI, SOS, and Isimangaliso. Budget allocated, SANPAC 637, SANBI 319, SOS 204, and then Isimangaliso 132 for the 6 months. We've therefore transferred, you know, 144. We transfer on monthly basis. And the biggest transfer has gone to SOS, and I think SOS 50% because they don't have, you know, like an allocation for infrastructure. We transfer for infrastructure and we transfer for their operational budget. The other ones, I think they are trending well. Why is infrastructure not transferred in the first six months of the year? Most of the time they take long chain to submit their business plans. So first we wait for the business plan. By the time they use their own funds, and then we transfer the infrastructure account to them to the travel. And then the other allocations, smaller allocations to other agencies, the big one is our Green Fund, which is run by DBSA. This year we've got a budget of 180 million. Also, DBSA is very slow in requesting their fund, more especially if they've got, you know, like rollover funds from the previous year, because they do retain those funds. So they normally give a submission to us for this, so we haven't transferred anything to the Green Fund. And then all the other ones are smaller, you know, like funds. The Global Environmental Fund, also we haven't transferred. And those are the only small transfers that we do to other smaller public entities except for the Green Fund. And then we've got the big allocation in our environmental public works projects. Those are the ones that I said the Auditor General is drawing his attention to. We've got an allocation, working for water, working on fire, and environmental projects. But all these are EPWP projects, and they take a budget of 2.5 billion per annum. So for working on water, it's transferred 40%. Working on fire, 65%. And I think Dr. Preston explained the other time why we transfer so much at the beginning of the first quarter. He actually explained that it's actually in preparation for the early response to fire, because you cannot plan for fire. And right at the beginning of the year, there's a lot of planning to be done, you know, infrastructure to be paid for, like the chartering of helicopters, protective clothing, and all other consumables, if I put it right. So that's why they were sitting at 65%. And all the other EPW projects were a little bit slow, because also are aligning it to what, you know, like the Office of the Accountant General is saying, and the Auditor General is saying, and we're reworking the financial statements now. Next slide. This is just a presentation of complying with the 30 days payment report as per note instruction note number 34. We keep the slide to show that we are still trending well. The red line shows that we should pay our invoices in 30 days. And I think for the last 2 years, we have been paying our invoices between 10 and 15 days. For foreign assistance, we don't have a lot of foreign assistance. I think for the last 2 or 3 years now, we've actually dropped from about 48 million for the last 3 years, and now we're only sitting at about 22 million. And I think we're reporting and trending well on that. And we're also looking here now, next slide, at our public entities. You know, like mainly we try to look at the revenue in relation to the funds that are transferring to our public entities. And we are happy to, you know, like realize that SANPAC's, while we transfer 144 million or 126 million excluding VAT, because they account differently, for the first 6 months they've collected their 1.2 billion revenue. SANBI, we've transferred only 120 million, and I think they are doing well on their revenue. They've collected 66.7 million of their own revenue. SOS transferred 102 million, and SOS revenue has also increased 84 million for the 6 months. Isimangaliso, I see it has their revenue has grown very much. There's a 99.5, which I'm checking with Isimangaliso, you know, of other donor funds, just to be able to give a bigger analysis. But I think they did when they presented last time. Next slide. So the analysis of the public entities for the 6 months, only Sanbi is showing a deficit. I think it's a, you know, like it's a book entry deficit according to CRAP. It's not that, you know, like they are losing. And what the reason that they gave to us is that we are too slow in transferring our infrastructure grants. So they use, you know, like other money, and then that's why they're showing a deficit for the 6 months. But all of them are actually in a surplus. Next slide, and that is just the graphical presentation thereof. And I think that's all, Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. So that, honorable members, we are going to discuss the report presented last week and today's financials. I saw there was a statement from Scopa that you will be appearing to Scopa. I don't know whether you send another delegation that side, or is it tomorrow or today? Don't you want to take that one first?
Chair, we sent in an apology to Scopa, because what they wanted was a response on the annual report, why we have not tabled and why we're tabling, just to give them the reasons behind that. So we sent through the letter that the minister had signed around reasons for tabling, and we indicated that we are finalizing the engagements with AG, and also we should then be able to be with them, because we're hoping that we should be able to table by end of November.
They might be very upset with you for not coming, but I can't speak on their behalf. So, okay. Any engagements? They're working on fire. We did receive it's now sitting at 66%. On the second quarter. We did get an explanation why, but I'm not sure whether it's a convincing explanation, because procurement of equipment, we take it that equipment is, they have got sufficient equipment is there. So I don't know whether they buy equipment every financial year or what is the situation. we might have to get a detailed briefing on this when we engage with Working on Fire. Remember, we the last time we requested them to go back and prepare a detailed report on the experience in Canada. So we might have to include this one in there so that they can then prepare for this one. Because I think somebody must make a case for this. There must be justification for the fact that in the first in the second quarter already 66% has been transferred. But members are free to raise questions relating to the rest of the issues. Honorable Mabil.
No, Jeff, the first comment. I think we, in 2014 or 15, we had the opportunity to visit the head office, the green building, and we were really impressed. It's really green.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really green in the two states. It's the first building that one has seen. So it's ready for money, we agree. Maybe we must say the chair, if we have time, the chair must be good there. Just two questions on the Green Fund and the Global Environment Fund. You are saying that the DIA is giving 180 million and the fund is managed and administered by the DBSA. Now you say that the rollover funds, I missed that aspect. Can you repeat that one of the rollover funds? What were you saying? That's the first. It's linked to the second one that I was going to ask. Is that you said in terms of the Global Environmental Fund, this is disimbursed to other smaller entities or what? Can you give us more details? And this Global Environmental Fund, how much is it? And how much are you... this is a chair fund, in my understanding. How much are you, in quantity terms, giving to the entities that you spoke about? Now, you have said lastly, CFO, through the chair, that one of the reasons that the departments, the entities are not spending on time and they utilize their money is that you disimburse or transfer the money late. What is the reason for that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mapilo. responses?
Okay, let me perhaps start with the Green Fund, the 180 million. Last year we gave the Green Fund 300 million. I went through their financial statements. I don't have the figure in my mind of how much was retained. Remember, they don't pay the money back to National Treasury. But then they've got two processes. First, they approve the projects that are going to be funded. And thereafter, then only request the money. Then they start by using, you know, like the surplus that they've retained.
Can you repeat that? You transferred 180?
Last year, 300 million.
300 million?
Yes. This year, to DBSA,
okay.
Development Bank of South Africa. And they don't pay back any surplus to National Treasury. They just, you know, like declare it like the other like the public entities. But I must go check how much they retained, you know, like for 2015-16. But also the other process that takes long, it's where they, you know, like review the projects, approve the projects through different board levels. And I also sit in the audit committee of the Development Bank of South Africa. So that process takes actually long. And most of the time we transfer towards the end of the last quarter, or actually at times even towards February the following year. So they've got a very long process of approving, you know, like green projects. And at times they transfer, you know, like in small tranches. And they've got a combination. At times it is loans, at times it's grants, at times it's some research. So it's a whole, you know, like, so we keep this money for a very, very long time in our books and only transfer it at the end.
Chair, if I may just add there, what normally happens is these projects are also multi-year projects. So when you submit your business plan, it would then reflect what that amount is, and then we transfer that amount up front. So they then tend to keep it for those years as well.
So how, so how does it work? You get the money from where, Treasury?
Yes.
Or from the fund itself?
From National Treasury. And
it comes from the fund through the National Treasury.
Yes.
Get to the department.
Yes.
Department transfer it as it is.
Yes.
To DBSA.
And
then DBSA, how do they account back to the department on how they've used the money?
There's a number of, you know, like DDGs that are sitting on the board of DBSA.
DDGs,
yes. And I think two of us in the department sit alternately on the audit committee, but I sit in the audit committee of DBSA. So
they don't account formally, they account by virtue of you sitting in their board.
No. They do account formally. They submit financial statements to the department.
Okay.
So, and they also,
We also submit the financial statements just to our audit committee, just for information. But they are also being subjected to the audit committee of DBSA. The Green Fund is a fund that is accounting to the audit committee of DBSA. They are also accounting to the board of DBSA. And they are also having, you know, like us, represented in the board as well as in the audit committee.
Okay. So let me just understand this thing. DBSA is responsible for administering the fund. And then they get those funds through allocations from DIA. And do they get money from DIA only for this program, or do they get it from other departments?
For the Green Fund, it's just from DIA.
Just from DIA.
Yes, yes. And that's why I say it is paid. If you look at their financial statements, you can see the analysis. It's research. It's some investments and it's some loans, but it's a very detailed, you know, like.
But then it means that if we need to get a full and comprehensive report on the implementation of the Green Fund, we must then invite the DBSA to the committee. Am I right? You must speak to the. So the acting DDG wants to respond and she's not sure. Okay, am I right? Is that what we need to do?
Yes, Chair, we need to do that. I was just saying to the CFO that this happens with the department, because what she was explaining is that DBSA would still get their financials audited, which includes the Green Fund, but they submit to the department the report together with the audited report on the Green Fund. So there is that accountability in terms of checking the checks and balances. That's what
okay.
I wanted to clarify.
All right. I think what is of interest, because this thing doesn't come for the first time, is how is the Green Fund utilized? To take forward some of the, isn't it this money comes from a, what is this, global? Oh, there are two. This is from finance, yeah, I was clarified before. So, the DBSA is an implementing agent on behalf of the department on the Green Fund. So the issue is that how is it, where are the projects, how are they initiating the projects, are they just sitting and waiting for people to come and submit the projects, or is there a way of them initiating the submissions and so forth? So which is something that I think we can only get from the DBSA. So all right, maybe let's step off this story by saying we will invite both the DBSA.
Wait,
Honorable Mabili. We must get the DBSA and the department to jointly come and brief the committee on the Green Fund itself. Okay? All right. Your second question, Mabili.
Yes. Okay. With the chief, it's not that we are transferring to the chief. I think we are paying for our membership. It's membership fees. So we pay about 16 million per annum.
Okay.
So we're not transferring for them to do anything. It's only that
membership fees.
Yes, it's membership fees. We just classify them as, you know, like other transfers. We will do international.
Okay.
The late submission or late transfer of infrastructure grants. The infrastructure grant, it's like, you know, like expanded public works budget that is sitting, you know, like with our with our expanded public works, you know, like a budget. And we've always heard that it is the public entities that are not submitting their business plans on time, and therefore the infrastructure grant cannot just be transferred as an operational grant because it's not for wages and salaries and whatever. So we hold it back until we're happy that the business plans are approved. But then it doesn't mean the infrastructure delays, because also public entities do retain some of the funds through the approval of National Treasury. So they utilize that. But when reporting, because of GRAP, you have to allocate what is related to infrastructure to infrastructure. So I was saying then, I think that's why Sandy, was it Sandy that is showing a deficit? Yes, it was Sandy that is showing, and they are saying we haven't transferred the infrastructure grant, but it is there. We will transfer it.
Okay, are you happy? Doesn't look like there's more questions. The members are... The other time, you know, I just want to... It's an issue that I think you also reflected last week when we presented on a... on environmental programs. And I think it's an issue about accounting that you have got with the Auditor General. I just want to find out what actions have been taken now to avoid a repeat of that problem, because we are now in the second quarter. Or we've reported on the second quarter, we are now in the third quarter. The next quarter is going to be the end of the financial year, and we don't want to be sitting with the same problem. So what are the actions that have been taken now to make sure that we don't have a problem where we are going to have to engage with the AG again? Honorable Khadebe, maybe you must ask so that they can respond at once.
Thank you, Chair. I need to ask something. I left you my note. Chair, I'm grappling with this issue between the AG's office as well as the office of the general office, accounting office. I know that there was a letter that was issued in 2013-14 to departure in implementing the modified cash standards. Can you give the committee what is this discrepancy that exists between those two offices, which led now in the minister not be in a position to table the annual report? Can we get clarity on that issue? Because it seems like it's a pie day up in the sky. We don't have facts as the portfolio members. What is really the issue behind the scenes? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, PG. Or CFO.
Okay, thank you, Chair. It's actually a problem that has been there for about 2 years. Where, remember, National Treasury issues standards every year. So now this is modified cash standard. And if we go back to my slide, I'll just go back quick. I don't know what it doesn't. I think it's slide number 4. These transfers, these are expanded public works projects. And we are using section 8.41 and 8.42 of National Treasury, which says you can transfer. But before you transfer, you must make it a point that the entity that you are transferring to is complying with these sections, which means your audit committees, your reporting, your quarter, like DBSA. DBSA is one of the main implementing agents. And therefore, the compliance is through the DBSA board. So when we transfer per section 8.4.1 and 8.4.2, that is a treasury regulation, we also make it a point that you don't just dump the money the audit committee, project management, quarterly reporting, annual reporting, and financial statements. So the standard that was issued by National Treasury 2 years ago, which is modified cash standard number 16, is saying don't transfer, follow a supply chain process, which means tender in a nutshell. That's where the auditor started. Last year we had the same problem and the auditors reversed the qualification. That was the first departure. This year, the auditor said, now we've got a departure for the second time. Now we are qualifying you. And we are saying, for expanded public works projects, how do we go on tender? Because we know that if you want to create a park, we've got our own quantity surveyors. And we don't want to be overcharged by private sector by saying we are going to do the park for you for 20 million, whereas pay our quantity surveyors, we can only do it for 5 million. So we were saying to the Auditor General, why don't you audit us according to the Treasury regulations that we're using and according to the controls that we're using, because we're managing the output and you want us to, you know, like, classify this thing as goods and services or do tenders. That is input. It doesn't mean that the output is going to be, you know, like, there. So that is the argument that we've had for 3 years. And we're saying this process is also predating the current people that are in National Treasury, because these projects already started before our time, round about 2003. And it was approved by the then National Treasury. And the intention was that you have to pay wages of those, you know, like people that you are training to build, whatever, and then from there build the structure. And I think DG normally says it emanated from the fact that we didn't want to give people grants. We wanted them to learn how to build, to learn, to train them. So this transfer has got, you know, like different sectors. It covers accredited training, non-accredited training, wages, clothing, transportation. It's expanded public works project. So that's where the age is started. We don't want you to transfer. We want you to go on tender. We argued that last year. They realized that there is a conflict. They changed the qualification. This year they came and said, we're not even going to audit you. We're going to qualify you. So that's where the problem is. So now that's when then we involved the minister, and we still wrote a draft determination for the Minister of Finance to say the auditors must prove that we are dumping the funds. The auditors must actually, or Auditor General must scrap Section 8.4.1 and Section 8.4.2, including PFMA 38, Section 38.1G. Because that's what we're using to manage the projects. Or correct the conflict between modified cash standards. So everybody was on board. The chief procurement officer reviewed our supply chain process of how we appoint the implementing agents and found it to be correct. So we're happy with that one. Then the Auditor General, realizing that the minister is not going to accept the qualification, went to had separate meetings with the Office of the Accountant General, where they agreed that, okay, it's fine, let them stay with their transfer.
CFO, can we, you see, you are giving us a lot of details, but this is verbal.
Okay.
See, there's nothing in writing. We appreciate the information. But I'm just thinking aloud that the issue is such that I think we require a briefing from the department on the modified cash standards and why the department is not able to comply with it. According to the AG, the modified cash standards was introduced about 3 years back, and for two consecutive years, the department has been getting an exemption from complying with the standards. according to them, the last exemption which was given to the department, it was made clear that that is going to be the last exemption to be given to the department. Now, there are other departments which have got a similar situation, like the Department of Human Settlement, for instance. You remember, human settlements, they are transferring funds which are building their houses, but that asset does not become the asset of the government or the department. It then becomes the asset of the beneficiary, and therefore the modified cash standards in terms of looking at issues of assets won't be applicable. So they say that that is the advice they've given to say, make an application for the department to be treated in the same way that human settlement is treated, so that you don't have to comply fully with the standards. So that exemption can be on that basis. So I don't want, because there may be further questions. Remember, you say you are transferring in terms of the regulation, Section 8.4, but you are not only transferring to environmental projects, you are also transferring to the entities. Yes. So I think it's better, honorable members, that we get a written report on this issue, so that, for me, I think it's an issue that has to be finalized probably by the DG's forum, where Treasury will be there, because Treasury through the Accountant General are the ones who issues the standards. And when they issue the standards, they must take people through the standards, train them, and all of those things. For instance, on this cash modified cash standards, I'm told that there is no textbook that speaks to this. You can't go to a bookshop and buy a textbook on modified cash standards as a standard of financial accounting. It's something that, you know, it's coming from somewhere. But Treasury has accepted that, and why Treasury has accepted subjecting other departments to comply to that, it's something else that probably has to be discussed there. But our interest is to say, how is the department not able to comply with the standard? And is there another way of trying to avoid a possible conflict with the Auditor General? I think for me, that's where we come in. And the explanation we're giving us must just be on writing, so that we're able to then schedule another briefing, probably when you do the third quarter or whatever the case may be. I don't know whether honorable members are comfortable with that. Honorable Khane.
Exactly like what you are saying, Chairperson, because I think they need to resolve this issue. We don't want to have a similar situation come next year. The minister can't table because this issue hasn't been resolved. I think what you are suggesting, it's a good way forward. Only when they come to table the third quarter, they must give us an update. How far are they in resolving the issue of these modified cash standards?
Yeah. And we may even schedule a separate briefing for that, depending on the committee program. Honorable Makwe.
Chair, I thought once the matter has been resolved with the AG, now that they will be able to table, it means there will be some clarity around the matter. And at that point, it will serve before the committee, and will maybe taken on board how it was actually resolved. So I thought it shouldn't be necessarily be prolonged unless if the problem will be. So my view was that when they agree for this year, whether it's exemption or whatever, they will have then agreed in terms of how they will handle the outer years.
and so on. So I thought it's a matter that is about to be resolved. Thanks.
It's a matter that is about to be resolved, Whip. Are you confident of that?
Then, until then, I've got no basis for I believe that
okay.
The will find each other and
yeah.
Come back to us to say, this is how we have resolved it for this year, and going forward, this what should happen.
Okay.
So that's when we'll begin to engage the way forward part.
Yeah.
If there's going to be still challenges. But we may not need to jump or preempt the discussions and the way forward in terms of how they'll have concluded it.
Our interest is to see this thing resolved so that in the next financial year there is an issue about Tibley.
Mm.
So in order to avoid that, we want a full briefing on what the CFO was saying. But if the matter is resolved, as the whip is saying, then it's fine. We can then, when you table, you can come and explain how the issue was resolved, whether there's not going to be able to be problems going forward. Acting DG.
Thank you, Chair. I think we will then give a briefing when we table the report. I wanted to add that there has been this engagement. I didn't want to go back to, I think CFO was just giving a brief history of where we come from and what the discussions have been. But in the last engagements with AG, that we have reached an agreement in terms of how we then try to still meet the standards, because the challenge, as she was putting it, was around now classifying these transfers to EPW projects as goods and services. And on the basis of some of the facts that some of these issues are our own engineers, our own people that we have that we want to utilize the skill, and they agreed that we can then reclassify those as contractors. Am I correct? As contractors, so that we can still try. So we found common ground in terms of that, and we are busy with that reclassification. Then they will then audit. So I think the issue will be what the outcome of that audit will be, but at least we've agreed on
okay.
How we classify.
Fine. I think its agreement has been struck. Brief us on when you table the annual report on specifically that, because we don't want to be here on the modified cash standard again as a problem going forward. If it's resolved, then it's resolved. We don't have to schedule it in the third quarter. You can give us that briefing when you table the annual report. It will be in the next quarter, because December, when are we rising?
Five.
So when you complete your annual report by end of November, then we'll definitely get that presentation next year. So it will be in the third quarter. So you must come and brief us so that we don't have to have issues going forward, because we always make a point, we've always made a point that the department, our view is that it's almost like a model department where things seem to be gelling. Things seem to be working all right. All the entities are receiving unqualified, three of them clean audits, one with matters of emphasis, and we are very hard on them. Look, they've received an unqualified audit opinion with matters of emphasis. But we are still very hard, because we think that they can continue to get a qualified clean audit. So all the entities unqualified, the department used to get clean audits, and there is a reason for us to worry when things seem not to be going all right. That's why we want to insist that the department, you cannot afford to drop the ball at this time. So that's why we want to get that briefing, so that this thing does not get repeated going forward. So I guess we'll get that next year in January or February, But everything else seemed to be fine with the financials and the other performance issues. Any other thing? You are welcome, Honorable Member. We missed you when we started. We shouldn't have started, but unfortunately, we're not sure what time we're going to be arriving. But you're welcome to the committee. We didn't get your apology either. So I guess we're done. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The meeting is then adjourned.
We love you.